The Grandstand, Season 6, Episode 10. Double digits here. Your host, P-Money, this week, Pushan, and Knowles in New York. What is going on, my friend?
Yo, spicy weekend. Cue the Sade, baby.
Ooh, yeah. Spoiler alert. We got a new winner this year, and it feels great.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I'm assuming people who listen to this podcast have watched the race. It was worth waking up at 4 a.m. for me. It's one of those that doesn't fit the European time zone, which I'm not going to complain too much because usually you guys get fucked.
Yeah, I mean, Aussies always get a little thrown under the bus. But I mean, almost, I feel like the calendar's not very fair to Aussies either. But
yeah,
I don't. Yeah, so it's like Australian retribution. Is really what it is. Well, and frankly, like the sport is so Eurocentric. It's like, you know what? Go fuck yourselves. Okay.
Yeah.
Just had to get that out there.
Don't worry. It's going to change when there's like 18 races in the US only in the next 5 years.
That's not going to happen. Get out of here.
Yeah. Maybe not 18, but I could see 5. But anyway, speaking of retribution, I don't know if you saw Susie Wolf has filed criminal charges against the FIA for... Yep. The case that happened around the offseason where the FIA accused them of basically sharing insider information. So that's pretty big. We'll keep an eye on that. I think it's great. And Lewis came out and supported it and everything. So yeah, let's see what happens.
I'm like fully on Susie's side. I love the support that Lewis gave to it. Mm. I think the biggest thing is that she did it outside of FIA procedure. So she actually filed it in a French court
against, that's right.
Against the organization. This has more legal teeth on it than even an FIA sanctioned ruling could have. And also, like, good honor, because it was just bullshit. So
yeah, don't let the FIA just do whatever they want and then just say oops.
Yeah, my bad. Sorry.
Oops. Yeah,
good for her.
Last episode we talked about Bottas being the honorary Aussie, and boy, did he deliver in the pre-race. Oh my, apparently he got off his flight and went straight and did that, what is it, Uber Eats commercial?
In Australia, they have Uber car share.
Ah, that's right. Yeah.
And oh my God, like what? like brilliant. Whoever the agency is who did that, or if it was an internal Uber team, I don't know who it was, but holy shit. Just brilliant. And also just... the, you know, him in a fucking, you know, nut hugger or budgie smuggler, as the Aussies call it, or speedo, just in the cadence of the whole thing was, it broke the internet.
It really did. It went beyond F1, I feel, too.
It did. 100% went beyond F1.
Tell you what, you stole a show in my book in terms of the Aussies. I feel like everyone was saying, yeah, we got three Aussies this weekend. Piastri, Danny Rick, of course. And Valtteri.
Valtteri. Yeah. Man, it's good for him. That was hilarious. Valtteri had a fun weekend off track. And then
on track. The usual 29 to 48 second pit stops. It just hurts. But as we said, it finally happened. I think Knowles' prayers were answered this weekend. I don't know how many candles you lit across the world in the past 2.5 years. Max Verstappen DNF'd within the first 3 laps. And there's a lot to talk about. So let's roll that intro.
Roll it, man. I can't wait to talk about this.
I am stupid. Bring back the fucking V12s.
You're too old to have driven here, really. Shame you wasn't fast enough to get to Formula One.
All the time you have to leave this place.
Fuck them all. More ladies in the paddock. There's too many dudes in the paddock.
That Alonso quote is quite fitting as well. All the time you have to leave the space. We'll get into that later because that's not the most important thing that happened. Lap 2, Verstappen, tires smoking after Sainz passed him on the outside. A really quick corner. People were getting really excited. And all of a sudden, we see him dive into the pits. And I think that collectively across the world, people were cheering like like a goal scored during a final of a World Cup. That's how I felt, but very silent because I was staying over at a friend's house and it was 5 a.m.
It was a really long set of laps, though. It felt longer than, like, you know, two or three laps. And so I thought, I mean, he stayed out for quite a bit, even after the car had started smoking.
Did you think he was going to make it?
I don't know. I mean, it was weird because Sky Sports had this whole, they were like, oh, it looks like it's, they were just saying it was like oil slick that might have been burning up in the engine, or like they're trying to find these like excuses that would have suggested that he was going to stay out. And then, you know, we saw the car start to slow down on track and get past. I was in LA, and so it was, I think, what, like 9 or 10 p.m. there. And I think I might have, I screamed at the TV.
Yes.
Like by myself at home. And I'm like screaming at the TV, like, fuck yes.
You jumped up and down, didn't you?
I mean, dude. Yeah. I might have blacked out a little bit.
I definitely did some, like, you know, fists in the air, like just won a race. Like the French Grand Prix podium, that gorilla. That was great.
But dude, I mean, what a moment. And you know, I will say this, like, it feels kind of shitty to rule like root for that moment, because it's like, you know, but it's just been, I also don't like, I don't like hating on like success, right? Like,
no,
Max has been incredible. We can't deny that. But yes, I mean, I'm joining the team of happy about a Max DNF.
As you said, it's been a long time. 43 race finishes. That streak just ended for him. And in that streak, listen to this, in that 43 races, he won 35 races. Jeez. Out of those 43, and scored 1,055 points. That is completely wild. And if he had won this race, he would have won 10 in a row twice in his F1 career, which is wild, but he didn't. And yeah, it's a little breath of fresh air. And as it happened last year in Singapore, it was Carlos Sainz that picked up the victory. And I don't want to say picked up, because he put in a huge performance all weekend. He was close to Leclerc and actually faster than him qualifying. Out-qualified him and really brought it. 2 weeks after appendicitis, he comes back and he fucking, dude, takes it.
I mean, if you didn't have a smile on seeing Carlos Sainz cross the finish line in P1 after the end of that race, you have no soul. I mean, what a wild, wild 2 weeks for him.
And apparently he wasn't even 100% during practice. He was walking slowly, and there was even talk of him not racing after Friday because he was too tired. And he said, like, it took him two laps in the car and he felt right back in it. But he felt that as soon as he got out, he was just like no energy at all, because he couldn't do a preparation like he usually does, which,
yeah, I mean, he was saying basically, like, even going into qualifying, he's like, let's see how I feel. another appearance from Oliver Bearman, which, you know, frankly, we know that dude picked up that bag of rocks and crushed it, but just had to throw that one back in here. I just would somebody get this guy a fucking job,
right?
Yeah. Like, what?
I don't think I've ever seen it in any sport where someone's doing this well and is in danger of not racing.
It's nuts. It's crazy. I was just watching the post-race press conference, and they asked Charles and Lando, you know, if they felt that Carlos is very underrated. And I don't think it is that he's underrated. I just think it's like, unfortunately, Carlos has found himself in a position where a driver came on the market that has more success than he's had. And that's just the way that cookie crumbles. Having said that, I've got some theories on where doors could open up for him. And I mean, like, to get your appendix taken out and then go win a fucking Formula One race, dude, that is big dick energy all day. Like,
All day.
Like all day.
Apparently, I mean, I remember when Albon had his taken out last year, he came back and scored points. So now the running joke is you need to get that removed. Yeah. Maybe Norris will get his first win if he does that.
Yeah. Lando. Lando goes to some black market fucking surgeon and gets his appendix taken out.
You know, they're in Australia, you know, on the way to Suzuka next race. They got a couple weeks off. Well,
there's some places you could stop on the way to Japan.
Maybe stop by Hong Kong, get a little surgery.
Can you imagine if that becomes a trend?
That'd be the worst trend ever. Holy shit.
Yeah.
But if it works, that'd be amazing.
Get your appendix taken out and you'll be a world-class athlete.
There must be a doctor that's kind of putting in some advertisements right now.
Carlos Sainz did it. You should too.
Not only did Sainz win, Leclerc came in second. We got a Ferrari 1-2, which is wild. I never thought I'd be saying this. I knew Ferrari would be doing well, but before this race, I would have settled for, you know, a P2 and a P4, but maximized points. Leclerc even had fastest lap. And honestly, if Leclerc had won this race, he would have actually been leading the championship right now. That's how close it is up there.
That's the thing, man. Like, I genuinely think, and we'll get to Checo in a little bit, but dude, if Ferrari puts in these as we said in the last episode, you know, they're clearly the second best team on the grid, and the margin is shrinking, and so like they could right now, I see a challenge for constructors title this year.
If they continue like this, man, check it out, the constructors title. There's only, I think there's 4 points difference, 97 to 93, and in the drivers' championship. I mean, obviously, it's really unfair to say this because Max has only finished two races in which he's maximized his points there. But 51 to Max, 47 to Leclerc, 46 to Perez, and 40 to Sainz, who remember has only raced two of those races. So, yeah, it's gonna get interesting if this trend continues and Ferrari can develop. And I'll tell you what, it was a lot of fun to see like an old school kind of throwback during this race of Ferrari versus McLaren, because we had Ferrari 1-2 and McLaren 3-4 with Norris coming in with a strong result, another podium. Another stat, though, that doesn't really go in his favor. It's a positive one, but 14th podium, but also most amount of podiums without a win still. So boys got to change that this year.
Yeah, he was bummed, dude. He looked like he had some serious sad boy energy after the race.
Yeah.
I was like, is he going to throw a little bit of a hissy fit here? Because he actually thought he should have finished above Charles.
Yeah, I kind of agree. They kind of fucked up their strategy there. They covered the undercut, and then they had to kind of re-switch their drivers around because they were on a offset strategy. And I think he was right. They kind of pit too early, McLaren. But
yeah,
I think also one thing that's interesting is that the amount of times Norris finished P2 last year, especially in the second half of the season, like he's probably wondering, why the fuck didn't that happen to me when I was getting those, you know, strong results last year? Like, he could have definitely scooped up a win if Max had one of these problems. But hey, it's the way it is. I think it's still a strong result for McLaren. And Piastri, I'll tell you what, that's second P4 in a row. So he's really coming in his own as well at home.
I mean, dude, like I don't think, you know, if I were Lando and Oscar and the entire McLaren team, I think I'm encouraged by this. I mean, obviously you had the DNFs of the Mercedes, and then Max's DNF. So that changes things a little bit. But at the same time, I still think McLaren has put themselves in the position where they're like, they're the team, they're putting the results to deserve their position right now. So
yeah,
I'd be encouraged by what, and let's not forget where they were at the beginning of last season. So, you know, to finish P3 and P4 in Australia, you take that and run with it, dude, like 100%.
Yeah. And just to explain the team orders, there's nothing controversial about that. It's just that Norris got the short end of the stick on the pit stops, which meant that he lost his position to Piastri, and the team corrected that in giving in the position back, and especially since he had fresher tires. So no controversy there for me. I don't know what you think, but I'm pretty sure everyone thinks the same here.
Yeah, I'm in agreement.
Yeah, and fun fact, you remember the last time Ferrari and McLaren finished 1, 2, 3, 4?
No.
it was 2007, back when it was Raikkonen, Massa, Hamilton, and Alonso at
Spa. That was the last time it was a McLaren Ferrari 1-2-3-4.
Yeah, because then Red Bull came in, shit. And then a little team called Mercedes came in and won a lot.
Yeah. Well, Braun GP, and then that's Mercedes. Right. Well, and then Red Bull too.
Yeah, Red Bull's done some damage. We'll get to Red Bull very soon. Aston Martin, double points. Alonso was in the... Yeah, Alonso got a little bit of heat this weekend. Big crash at the end of the race when Russell was catching him. And basically, the way Alonso explains it, that he's always learning and trying to evolve as a driver. And he was trying something different in a corner, aka he got off the gas, hit the brakes, got back on the gas, hit the brakes again, and really slowed down. That surprised the shit out of Russell, who almost went into him, lost downforce, went off the track completely, and caused the end of the race with a huge shunt, which at first I was like, whoa, what happened? Did they both connect? But it turns out that Alonso was found guilty of erratic driving and potentially causing an incident in which there was no contact. It's a first. I've never seen this before. And I know you have thoughts on this. What do you think? Alonso a little...
Rewatch it. The amount that Fernando slows down, he knew exactly what the fuck he was doing. He was slowing down so that way George had to react. And by reacting, he was going to have to get on the brakes, or he's going to have to, you know, do something rash, which is what he did. I mean, it's interesting because like there was immediate blame kind of put on George. But when you watch what happened, to me, it looked like Alonso brake checked him and... like you said, caused George to lose downforce and he completely lost it back into the car and therefore causing the accident. I'm happy with the penalty. I don't see an issue with it because at the end of the day, you know, George does have a tendency to push it on the last lap like that and bend it. It's not the first time that we've seen this happen with him.
AKA Singapore last year, which is also the last
every
time.
Every single time he's DNF'd, Carlos Sainz has won a race. So,
and George put it in the wall.
Maybe it was actually Carlos who, the smooth operator, not so smooth
on the Russell side.
Yeah, conspiracy theory here. But no, I'm trying to evolve as a driver. Give me a fucking break, Fernando.
I mean, that was pretty funny. He's got to try. I agree. I mean, it was cheeky. It was really cheeky. It's just that the line is a little blurry for me. Like we had it a few races ago when K-Mag was really slowing down on the line and helping his teammate out. There are ways to do it. Maybe this was too dangerous. Yeah, I think that Alonso deserves a penalty. But also, I feel like, is this too much? I don't know. I think there's corners. Depending on the corner, you can do certain tricks. I think I wouldn't call that brake testing personally, because I don't think Alonso does that as a driver, but maybe he went a little overboard. That's how I'll put it.
I mean, I definitely think he slowed down enough to the point where George was going to have to slow down and then he was going to have to speed back up. Right. Like he caused George, like that was maybe his idea I don't think Fernando's trying to get other guys to crash, but I think it happened so quickly going around that corner that George had very little time to react. You know, and it's a tactic. But I think the penalty was deserved.
And it's a tactic and he went a little too far. That's for sure. So, great. They still got double points. So instead of getting P6 and P7, that gave Lance Stroll P6 and Fernando P8. And no points for Mercedes this weekend because they had a double DNF. So obviously Russell binning in on the last lap and the race ended in a VSC essentially. But Lewis Hamilton, engine failure very early in the race. In the first third of the race, it just out of nowhere, it just popped.
I'm almost speechless for what happened with Mercedes this weekend.
Can I say something about that?
What? Go ahead.
Not about you being speechless, because I think I can see that. I think that engine failure almost saved Lewis's weekend, because he was so bad this weekend that he wouldn't have finished anywhere. He might have been like in the lower points or maybe not even in the points at that rate. So that engine failure might have been a blessing in disguise for him.
So you mean you're saying it masked the shitty performance he put in?
Yeah, and I'm not saying it's entirely his doing, but comparing it with Russell, he was clearly struggling a lot more. And I felt like, I don't know what there was there to take for him in this race. Maybe a P9, I think, on pace.
I mean, listen, man, I'm like blown away by Mercedes' inability to put in better race results. Like a DNF because of an engine issue, and then, you know, George, which after watching that incident, I don't think totally his fault. You know, very difficult. I'm sure he was livid with Fernando afterwards. He did not look happy. You know, so a little bit like, it's tough because like those things aren't on the drivers. But at the end of the day, to your point too, like Lewis was fucking nowhere, and he just continues to seem lost at every turn with how Mercedes is going. And we talked about this, I think, in a previous episode, but it's like almost as if the more the season goes on, the further Lewis gets checks out.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from, but then you see Lewis hanging out in the garage and really putting in the time. Like he could have left, right? And so I'm a little confused, honestly, as to what's going on, because they were pretty bad on Friday, and then I think FP3, the pace was there, but they probably brought the engines up and the others didn't, and then nowhere in the race. But yeah, it's three races gone, three different tracks, a lot of promise coming into the season, a lot of talk from Toto and from Merck. Is it too early to assess Mercedes as a team, or can we just call it as a huge failure this year already, this redesign?
I'm not ready to say that yet. Interesting enough, like Toto Wolff got asked if it's time for him to leave after this weekend's race. I don't think we're at that point yet, but you know, I think come May or June, if this hasn't turned around, I think some higher ups at Merck need to start asking questions about the future of this team.
Mm. And they're probably already asking those questions.
Have to at this point, but I just mean like maybe decisions have to be actually made, not just questions asked.
Right. It's going to be a big reset for them in the next few years, it seems. Is Hamilton more pissed that this year is a write-off, or is he happy because Ferrari's doing well?
I think it's a little bit of both, dude. There was a
silver lining.
Yeah. I think there's a little silver lining. No pun intended. Yeah. yeah. Silver lining for the silver arrows. No, man, there's a video that kind of I saw circulating this past weekend of Lewis signing a Ferrari hat in Melbourne.
Which he does every year, to be fair.
Sure, but this year there's a little bit. He kind of had a cheeky smile on his face when he did it, though, this time. So, I don't know. Yes. I think Lewis, listen, he won six titles with this team. I think he cares about the team. I think, you know, the fact that he was in the garage says a lot. He could have left, but he didn't. He stayed in the garage to watch the rest of the race with the team. And I think that says something. It says he's not fully like, you know, just given up. But at the same time, I think in the back of his mind, he's like, Ferrari's on the come up and I'm happy about my decision.
Yeah. Speaking of signing Ferrari hats, did you catch the little segment when Fred Vasseur signs Liam Lawson's t-shirt and then Lawson goes back and signs his?
Fred, they go back and forth. Yeah. Fred's such a joker, man. He's never change Fred.
He's got the arguably one of the most highest pressure jobs in F1 in leading Ferrari, and he still manages to stay himself, which I find is pretty awesome.
Oh, it's great. It's fantastic. He's my favorite team boss right now.
By far. Back of the midfield here, we got Haas scoring points for the second weekend in a row with Hulk bringing in the points. And
What has happened?
I think what has happened is that this is I'm saying this seriously. This team management is way more efficient this year, and they're really maximizing everything they can from the car. Like they're not fucking anything up. They're not wasting any energy, and they're just putting everything in place and executing races really well. And that's two point scoring finishes in a row after not scoring points for 20 races for Hulk, which is a season pretty much. So fair enough. And there was, again, some team orders, and K-Mag played the team game, and good on him. There was a really good battle between them and the only Williams taking part in this race.
Drama at Williams.
Drama. Ooh, all right. So this is definitely one of the big storylines of the weekend. On Friday, Alex Albon had a pretty big crash, and there was debris everywhere. He basically broke the chassis. The chassis could not be used again, and Williams, of all teams, does not have a spare chassis or tub. And they had a decision to make, and James Vowles decided to bench Logan Sargeant and give Albon Logan Sargeant's car to maximize point scoring opportunities. On a business point of view, it seems like the right decision to make. On a sporting side and on a fairness side, kind of hurts to see Logan have to do that, especially when you know that he brings so much money to the team. And if there was any indication that they have no faith in him, they just slammed that door right in his face for 2020.
Well, yeah, I mean, especially given the fact that Alex fucking binned it.
Yeah.
Like, Alex broke his car, and then they're like, here, take his car.
Can I have yours, please?
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, it's like, no, man, it's like taking... That's like dessert coming to the table, and you take someone else's dessert after having eaten yours, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's something, you know, there's probably some other analogies that you could use, but you know, it's also just a slap in the face.
Right.
Like I understand the decision because it's the better decision as far as like trying to maximize what you can from the weekend. And frankly, like Logan is the second driver. Alex is outperforming him all the time.
Clearly.
And it just makes sense. And like, so as a teammate, it makes, you know, I'd understand, but it's still like, you know, I'd be sad as fuck if that happened to me.
Yeah. He even said it was the hardest day of his life, which I mean, yikes. Logan, we get it. And honestly, I don't know what you think about this, but I would have rather seen Williams put everything they have, all their resources, to actually supporting Sargeant, because I think he needs to build his confidence. And even Val said, it's going to be hard to rebuild that confidence. And I said, then why are you doing this to him? It's, for me, it just doesn't make sense on a human level. I get it. F1 is a business, but I wouldn't have made that decision.
It's a good point. I mean, I can't say I disagree. I still would have put Alex in that car if it came down to it. But yeah, no, I feel you, because that dude definitely needs confidence. And if you wanted one way to actually just demolish someone's confidence, that's it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if in Formula One you could come up with something more insulting than doing that.
Oh, trust me, Helmut Marko could probably come up with something.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, he has a whole list of just terrible things that he can do to drivers. It's just in a spreadsheet in Google. No, but dude, the only thing I could think of that would be worse is to get replaced by like Nikita Mazepin.
or they bring Latifi back.
Yeah, or they something, you know, just like something that silly. Oh man, but yeah, poor guy. Poor, you know, he's a compatriot. Not a great look for the Americans in Formula One.
Yeah, and there was a lot of talk because it was Albon's birthday, and it was like, oh, what do you want for your birthday? It's like, oh, here's your teammate's car.
Yeah.
And his birthday cake, because it's also his birthday. Yeah, but he doesn't deserve a cake. Yeah, no, I'm kidding. It's not his birthday.
Dude, that causes just millions of dollars of damage to the car, and yet he's like, you know, he's been given a new car and a birthday cake.
Oh man, having your cake and eating it.
Literally.
Yeah. And to be clear, he did not enjoy that. Alex is a good guy.
Birthday cake?
He probably enjoyed the birthday cake. I mean, who wouldn't, right? I'd love a good birthday cake. Chocolate. But that's besides the point. I think Albon.
Once a fat kid, always a fat kid.
Always, man. Ooh, it's that time of the. Yeah, I could have some coffee right now. But that's besides the point. I think Albon also felt super awkward. He didn't like that. It's not like he's like, give me the car. It was a team decision. You know, we've been praising Vowles a lot, but he is ruthless, and the sport is ruthless. And he might regret this later, but for now, that was the call to make. And hopefully they have, they can fix this for next week, or next race, sorry, which is in 2 weeks. It's not a lot of time to, they don't have time to produce another chassis, so they have to fix it. So I wonder if they'll give the broken chassis to Logan also later, because that could continue on this trend. But one thing I want to talk about is going back to Red Bull. Obviously, Max DNF, so he was not really part of the race. And he would have fared well. I think he wouldn't have won, but he would have definitely been up there. But one person who didn't fare well, who and who should have, is Checo. Checo had some issues in qualifying, was handed a penalty. I think it was three grid spots for impeding. Had to fight his way back, which is like the most Checo thing ever. It's always like there's a bit of a penalty, or he qualifies further back and he has to make his way back. And he only finished P5 in this race. And
it's not good, man.
That's not enough. That's not enough, no.
It's not enough. You know, and I think I'm it's interesting because now after Carlos's performance.
Yes.
You know where I'm going with this.
And I agree with you.
I mean, we already knew that this driver's market for 2025 was gonna get crazy. Now Carlos is like racing at a really, really high level. And he's part of the used to be part of the Red Bull family. I don't know if he, you know, is a little bitter about how things ended, because they didn't end that badly. It was just more like there wasn't really a pathway for him to the full-time seat at the time.
It's kind of like he understood, because he was teammates with Max at Toro Rosso at the time. Right. They understood that it was Max's team and they were not going to get anything, just like Danny Ric understood later. And but now things have changed and he's clearly a top driver now.
I'm starting to think Checo's not in that seat next year. But but in addition to that, like, neither should Yuki or neither should Danny Ric. Like, okay, yes,
good point.
Like right now, like based on those performances, I just don't see it.
You saw what Helmut said, right? This week?
No.
He did, I mean, Helmut that dick. He just came out, he came out stirring the pot. He said, you know, both of our drivers are not performing well. He said, Yuki is really fast in qualifying and Danny Ric needs to get better. But then he said, but Yuki needs to do better in the race because he should have scored more points in the first few races. So basically just backhanded compliments in one way and then just saying both of you guys are not doing enough to get the seat. And as much as it hurts, I tend to agree with him on that point. Danny Ric this weekend was very far from Yuki. He made a mistake in qualifying, lost a lap to track limits. I think because he felt the pressure of having to keep up with Yuki. And ended up starting way further back and finishing way further back. And Yuki, I thought, drove an amazing race. P7, good points for RB, let's call it, V-carb. Danny Ric said this is where his season was going to start. He wanted to give it a little boost, you know, on home soil. But I'm not seeing Danny Ric this year.
You know, he's never fared super well in the home race, home race. But the only thing I really have to say about him right now is that I'm not convinced that he's the right guy for to be in that seat, you know, and you know, frankly, like if P5 is not good enough with Checo, like, and Yuki is finishing P7, you know,
just two places behind him.
It's, you know, maybe there's a case to be made for Yuki in that Red Bull seat. I don't see it because I just don't think Yuki has a maturity for that kind of seat. I just don't. He's still really like raw, in my opinion. And the pressure of the Red Bull seat, I think, would get to Yuki very quickly, more so than it even did with Gasly and Albon. So, you know, you've got a driver in Danny Ric, who's a race winner, but is just still like doesn't have his mojo back. It's very strange. And I just, I'm not convinced. So,
yeah. Also, next race is Yuki's home race. He usually does really well there. We remember last year there was a little bit of drama with Lawson and Yuki took it really poorly.
Yeah.
So let's see. Next race is a big driver's track, as they call it. So maybe that's exactly what Danny Ric needs. But it is early, but when Checo is underperforming like he did this weekend, it's good to put in that performance to show Helmut that, hey, I'm still here. Because right now, only Yuki's perform. And I agree with you. You got a huge driver in Carlos Sainz that's free, knows the Red Bull family. Honestly, right now, even Christian Horner hinted at it in the press conference. He said, well, there's a driver that doesn't have a job next year who's doing really well. And Horner's really good at stirring the pot like that as well and putting the pressure. So
it's a Red Bull trait is what it is.
They love that shit, dude.
They love it. They love it.
And it doesn't matter if Danny Ric or not. They love Danny Ric, but they'll still throw him out to the curb if there's something better out there.
Yeah. Just this silly season is going to get great. I mean, and we're going to have a lot of answers, I think, by June. But right now, I don't think Checo's job is safe at Red Bull. Carlos Sainz has all the power. Even in the post race interview for Oz, Charles was like making a joke about how many team bosses Carlos has already been in touch with. and Lando was like kind of giggling as that was said. So clearly the dude is making some moves and he's thinking about his future.
And Sainz has, Carlos has that cheeky smile. He doesn't hide it. He's not coy about it. It's like,
no.
If I were him, I wouldn't give a fuck. I'd be like, hey, I'm out here. I need a contract, people. Give me something to sign.
There you go. Yeah. Give Sainz something to sign.
We've got our stand championship here and
yeah, boy,
you're extending that lead. We're into over little 20 by little. Points now. You're at 77 points to my 55. You got points for pole for Verstappen, which, man, I really thought we could do something this weekend. And we both got points for Leclerc. That's pretty much it. We didn't get anything else right this weekend.
I know. I mean, I had I just anticipated a max DNF, which was never going to happen, I would have... Oh no, I would have gotten it nothing right. So
right, me neither. We would have put Leclerc winning. Yeah. Also, anticipating a max DNF is way too risky.
Yeah, it's too risky right now.
Unless we both do it, which will not happen. But I thought for a second that I had the Gromo when I saw Russell in the middle of the road. I was like, ooh, what happened here? And then I quickly realized, damn it, there's no case for me here. Not this time. A week off next week, and then we go to Suzuka, which is, quite frankly, my favorite track on the calendar. It's a big driver's track. A lot of drama over the years here. I think a single lap, like in qualifying, it's one of the most amazing tracks to follow a driver on board, I think, personally. And I'm hoping that the field gets closer there, but I do think that Red Bull have designed a car that is tailor-made for that circuit.
Yeah, well, we'll see, man. I who knows? The thing here, too, is just not to... we'll talk about this next week, but, you know, I think people are starting to see some cracks in Max.
Ooh.
I made that rhyme on purpose.
And we're making a t-shirt.
I think some drivers aren't as scared of Max as they might have been going into the beginning of the season. So we'll see. That's just one thing I'm hoping is happening, especially with this confidence boost from the smooth operator.
Man, let's keep lighting those candles, Knowles. See what happens. Max was pissed when he got out of there. We could read his lips. He was like, stupid, stupid, stupid. Like they made a pretty stupid, I guess, mistake on the grid there. And he was not happy. And when Max is not happy, it's usually not good to be next to him on track on the next race. But we have a week off and we will be getting into our Suzuka preview next week. But in the meantime, make sure to follow us on social media at the Grandstand F1. A lot of interesting content coming out there. And from F. Knowles and I, we'll see you on the next one.